In this session, we will take a look at some other types of taxable income that may appear within your income tax computation. We start with some miscellaneous types of income. Section 687 of Income Tax, Trading and Other Income Act, known as ITOIA 2005, taxes any income that has not been taxed elsewhere. In practice, you will find that most forms of income are already taxed, for example, as property income or employment income. There are very few sources of income that are taxed under Section 687. A common type of miscellaneous income is casual earnings. These are earnings but are not from an employment, and therefore are not caught by the rules taxing income from earnings. Similarly, they are not income from self-employment, so are therefore not taxable as trading income. An example of this may be an employee who does a one-off job for somebody else, other than his main employer. This one-off job is not taxable as trading income, as he is not carrying out a trade. However, it is taxable income, so the revenue will tax it under Section 687 of ITOIA 2005. Any post-cessation receipts of a sole trader are taxed under Section 242 of ITOIA 2005. If a trader ceases in business, any receipts that he has after his business closes down are taxed under that section as non-savings income. Any profit received on the sale of patent rights is taxed under Section 587 of ITOIA 2005. Again, it is non-savings income. Let us have a quick look at how we deal with trust income received by a taxpayer. The way in which this type of income is taxed depends largely on what type of trust it comes from. You will occasionally come across a taxpayer receiving income from what we call a discretionary trust. If a taxpayer receives income from a discretionary trust in 2010-11, he is deemed to have done so net of 50% tax deducted at source. For example, if a taxpayer receives £600 of discretionary trust income, this is deemed to have been received net of a 50% tax credit. In this example, the tax credit is £600, leaving the taxpayer with gross trust income of £1,200. You will see that the tax credit of £600 is 50% of the gross figure. Always remember that it is this gross figure which must be entered into our income tax computation. Therefore, to turn the net of £600 into the gross, we need to gross up by 100 divided by 50. Finally, income from a discretionary trust is always regarded as non-savings income. It will therefore be entered into the first column in your income tax computation. Occasionally, you will come across a taxpayer who receives income from some other type of trust. For instance, a trust called an interest in possession trust.
Where non-savings and savings income is received by the trust, it will be taxed in the hands of the trustees at 20%. Dividend income will be taxed at the rate of 10%. The income paid out to an individual by an interest in possession trust retains its nature and therefore is either non-savings or savings income received net of basic rate tax, or dividend income received net of 10% tax. The income is then treated as any other non-savings, savings or dividend income in the hands of the recipient, who is entitled to any associated tax credit. Where a question deals with income from an interest in possession trust, it will state the type of income which has been received. In practice, the recipient will receive a certificate from the trustees called Form R185, which sets out the type of income received and the amount of tax deducted. Let us consider the treatment of income from an interest in possession trust by way of an example.
Andy receives £10,000 from the Broadman Interest in Possession Trust in 2010-11.
The form R185 received from the trustees shows that £6,000 of the income received was savings income with tax deducted of £1,500. £4,000 of the payment was dividend income, with tax deducted of £444.
Andy's only other sources of income for 2010-11 were his salary of £40,000, from which PAYE at £6,500 has been deducted, and net bank interest of £500.
Andy's total income therefore consists of non-savings income of £40,000. He has total savings income of £8,125, being the bank interest received and the savings income received from the trust, both grossed up by 100 over 80. Finally, he has dividend income of £4,444, being the amount of dividends received from the trust, grossed up by 100 over 90. We deduct the personal allowance from the non-savings income to arrive at taxable income. The non-savings income, which is taxed first, falls completely within the basic rate band and is taxed at 20%. £3,875 of the savings income falls within the basic rate band and is taxed at 20%. With the remaining £4,250 taxed at 40%. The dividend income is taxed at 32.5% as it exceeds the basic rate limit. Finally, we can deduct the tax suffered at source to give the tax due. This includes the PAYE of £6,500, the tax deducted at source from the bank interest, as well as the tax suffered on the trust income. If the person who sets up the trust, known as the settlor, has an interest in the trust, in other words, he can benefit from either the trust income or the assets of the trust, the whole of the income received by the trust is taxed on the individual as if it were received by him. He will be entitled to a tax credit in respect of the tax paid by the trustees in respect of the income. The settlor is also treated as having an interest in the trust property if his or her spouse can benefit from the trust.
Anti-avoidance rules are there to prevent a parent from diverting income to a minor child in order to utilise the child's personal allowances and or basic rate band. Where a parent or step-parent provides funds to or for the benefit of a child or stepchild, any income arising from those funds is taxed in the hands of the parent. This will include circumstances where a parent sets up a trust for a child or simply places funds on, say, a building society account for the child. The parental settlement rules only apply where the funds are settled by a parent, not by a sibling or grandparent, and where the child is under the age of 18 and is unmarried. There is an exception where the gross annual income generated by the parental funds is £100 or less. In this case, the income would be taxed on the child, and presumably will be covered by personal allowances. It is far more common to come across taxpayers who receive distributions from unit trusts. Unit trusts will distribute their profits to the unit holders in the form of either dividends or interest. If a taxpayer receives a dividend from a unit trust, we tax that dividend in the normal way, i.e., we treat it as received net of a 10% credit and gross up the net amount in the income tax computation. The gross figure is then entered into the dividend column. Similarly, if a unit holder receives an interest distribution from a unit trust, we tax this in the same way that we tax normal UK bank interest. This means the interest will be received net of a 20% tax credit and has to be grossed up in the tax computation. Having arrived at the gross figure, we simply treat it as normal bank interest. Let us now have a look at joint income. The most common example of joint income is income received jointly by husband and wife,
This could be a bank account held in joint names, or shares held in joint names, where the interest and the dividend needs to be split between the two taxpayers. Let us take the example of a husband and wife who, between them, own a property. You will see here that the husband's share is 60% of the property, and the wife's share is 40% of the property. So this property is jointly owned between them, although not in equal parts.
Let us assume that this property is let out and produces rental income, which is taxed as property income. The question is, how do we split this rental income between our two taxpayers?
There are two ways of treating joint income. The most common way, and indeed the most simple way, is to simply split the income equally between our two parties, regardless of their actual shares in the property. So 50% of the income is taxed in the hands of the husband and goes into his tax computation, and 50% of the rental income is taxed in the hands of the wife and goes into her tax computation. It is important to note here that the UK has a regime known as independent taxation, whereby the income of a husband and wife is always kept separate and is never aggregated together. The second way to treat joint income is for our two taxpayers to make an election to split the income in accordance with their beneficial entitlement in the property. If the husband and wife make such an election, therefore the husband will be taxed on 60% of the income, being equivalent to his ownership of the property, and the wife will be taxed on the remaining 40%.
If the taxpayers prefer this treatment, they must make an election to the revenue to this effect. If no election is made, the revenue will simply split the income equally between the two parties.
The declaration must be notified to HMRC within 60 days of the date of the declaration and applies to income arising on or after the date of the declaration.
One further point relates to dividends from jointly held shares in certain small companies called close companies. Such dividend income must always be split in accordance with the beneficial entitlements of the spouses.
A special income tax charge has applied since 2005-06. It relates to the use of assets previously owned by the taxpayer. For example, assume Mr. Y owned a house. Mr. Y enters into an arrangement whereby Mr. X becomes the beneficial owner of the house. Mr. X thereafter allowed Mr. Y to live in the house without paying market rent. In this situation, the pre-owned asset rules must be considered. In 2010-11, Mr. Y, the former owner, will be charged to tax on a notional amount of income equal to the rental value of the house for that year. For example, if the rental value of the house is £12,000 for 2010-11, Mr. Y will be taxed on income of £12,000 in 2010-11. This is only a notional amount of income. Mr. Y is not actually receiving cash of £12,000, but he is treated as receiving a taxable benefit of that amount.
The income is treated as non-savings, but is taxed as the top slice, i.e. after interest and dividends. If Mr. Y pays rent to Mr. X for his occupation, this will reduce the taxable amount. Therefore, if Mr. Y pays rent of £8,000, he will only be taxed on £4,000 because this is the extent of the benefit he is receiving. If he pays rent equal to the full rental value, he will have no taxable income.
A pre-owned asset tax charge will also apply if the property has been indirectly provided by the individual who occupies it. If Mr. Y had given Mr. X cash, which Mr. X had used to buy a house, which Mr. Y then occupies rent-free, Mr. Y would still be subject to a tax charge. If Mr. Y only provided a proportion of the funds needed to purchase the house, he will only be taxed on a proportion of the rental value. Let us assume that Mr. Y gave Mr. X £200,000, and Mr. X purchased a house costing £275,000, with an annual rental value of £12,000. If Mr. Y lives in the house rent-free, he will be taxed on a proportion of the rental value of £12,000, calculated by taking the £200,000 provided by Mr. Y and dividing it by the cost of the house of £275,000, giving a pre-owned asset charge of £8,727.
If an individual gives away an asset but continues to benefit from it, this may be something called a gift with reservation of benefit for inheritance tax. The pre-owned assets rules have been introduced to tax individuals who have managed to get round the gift with reservation rules by structuring the gift in a particular way, often involving the use of trusts. If the gift with reservation rules apply to the gift, there will be no income tax charge, as the taxpayer will pay inheritance tax instead. If an individual has already put an arrangement in place which would be subject to the income tax charge, he can make an election to treat the gifted property as subject to a reservation for inheritance tax. In this case, the income tax charge will not apply. In effect, taxpayers can opt to pay inheritance tax instead of income tax. As well as applying to land, the income tax charge will also apply to the use of chattels, such as paintings and other works of art.
The amount is calculated by applying the official rate of interest to the value of the asset. There is an exemption where the charge which would otherwise apply, before deducting any actual rents paid, totals £5,000 or less. In this case, there is no pre-owned asset charge. To work out whether the exemption applies, the aggregate of all the potential pre-owned assets charges must be considered.
Let us conclude this session by having a go at a practice question. On the page in front of you, you will see a question. The requirement here is to calculate Jonathan's tax repayment. Again, when you have arrived at the answer, check it by clicking the button at the bottom of your screen.
Jonathan receives income from a discretionary trust of £13,000. This is received net of 50% tax, so we need to gross up at 100 over 50. This gives us gross trust income of £26,000, and that figure is entered into the non-savings column. Jonathan's casual earnings are taxed as miscellaneous income and are treated as non-savings income. Jonathan receives interest of £1,430 on a National Savings Investment account. Remember that interest on National Savings accounts is already received gross, so no grossing up is necessary here. Finally, dividends from a unit trust are treated as a normal dividend, i.e. received net of a 10% tax credit. We have therefore grossed up the £14,400 to give us a gross dividend of £16,000. If we total up all of our income, it gives us net income of £30,000, £1,430 and £16,000 respectively. Don't forget to knock off the personal allowance of £6,475 from the non-savings income to give us taxable income as per the screen. We start by taxing the non-savings income of £23,525. This is fully taxed at the basic rate of 20%. National savings interest falls wholly within the basic rate band, so the whole of the £1,430 is taxed at 20%. This leaves £12,445 of the basic rate band remaining. Dividends of £12,445 are taxed at 10%, taking us up to the basic rate limit of £37,400. The balance of the dividends, which is £16,000 minus £12,445 equaling £3,555, is charged at the dividend upper rate of 32.5%. If we add these together, it gives us a tax liability of £7,390. From our tax liability, we need to knock off tax deducted at source. We will start by knocking off the tax credits on the trust income. If you recall, tax is deemed to have been deducted at 50% on trust income. The gross trust income is £26,000, so 50% of this is £13,000. Finally, there is a 10% tax credit attaching to the £16,000 of dividends. This tax credit of £1,600 should also be deducted. The tax deducted at source exceeds the tax liability, so Jonathan will be entitled to a repayment. And here the repayment will be £7,210. Note here that HMRC will repay the full amount of £7,210. This is because the £7,210 is treated as coming wholly from the tax that is deducted on the trust income.
HMRC will therefore be repaying the proper tax deducted on the trust income rather than deemed tax credits withheld on the dividend income. This concludes this lecture on other taxable income.